I thought that we could possibly just maybe over the next few weekends, because tomorrow we're going to focus on Hanuman, but otherwise I thought we could focus a little on humility and the mood of service, which we actually had a seminar about, what would it be, a year and a half ago, was it, in Drakensberg? Right. That was nice. So, yeah, I thought we could do, not go through the whole thing, but go through some parts of that seminar, because humility is such an important part of Krishna consciousness. It's like foundation, or it's certainly very important part of the foundation of Krishna consciousness. Some of you, looking around, some of you, maybe not so many, but some of you were present for that seminar. So you will have heard a lot of, or some or a lot of this, but that's all right. Srila Prabhupada said, repetition of a good thing is good. So if it is something you've heard before, that's not a problem, that's fine. So please repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, how many of you would like to become more humble? I'd like to become, sure, I really need to become, okay, and tolerant. Well, tolerance is connected with humility, of course. Actually, a lot of these Vaishnava qualities, they're interrelated, but humility always is a foundational part of the relationship. So, you know, when I was a new devotee, in early 1973, very early 1973, I was a very new devotee. I'm still a new devotee, because I've not even been a devotee for 50 years yet. No, so I'm still a new devotee. But back in 1973, we had this practice that it's sort of against the rules right now, but we had a practice at that time. We'd get up in the morning around 4, and we'd go up to the bathroom, or go around to the bathroom, where there was 1.5 showers, and I remember the very first morning I went in there, it was January the 8th, 1973, was the Monday. I moved in on January the 7th, which was the Sunday. I came walking into the bathroom, and every body was offering obeisances down this way and then up, and then down that way and then up, and then down that way and up, and then down that way again. It was our practice in those days. Whenever we saw everyone, devotee for the first time, we just offer obeisances. Of course, on my first morning, I was taken aback. I was not used to these things at all yet. But anyway, we got into it. It was the practice. So many obeisances. And it's just really nice. And we call that Vanchakalpa Yoga. Vanchakalpa Yoga. It's a good yoga. And I was going to invite you all to do it, but we're not allowed to bow down. I heard. I'm not sure why. It's the COVID. The COVID demon is down on grass level there somewhere. I'm not actually sure why. But just bear that in mind. Vanchakalpa Yoga. It's a very important anga or branch, limb. Literally, anga means limb, of the process of devotional service. And it's very enriching. In this material world, people have many problems. It's quite fantastic, actually. I had a friend, you know, back in those days, and I do mean 50 years ago, I had a friend who, if he didn't have something to be in anxiety about, he would get into anxiety. Yeah, really. Material life is very difficult. But one of the main problems is that people have inflated ideas of their own importance. And they want to grow that to become more important, or at the very least to protect that, however much importance they have at this stage. At least protect it and maintain the same level, but best to grow it. But definitely not to lose it. It's one of the main things in material life, that a sense of confidence arises when I feel some conviction that I'm important. And because if I'm important, I can mix with other people and, you know, with my head up high and not feel awkward or out of place. But the problem with that is that people are actually not that important. They're definitely not that important to the other people, because the other people feel that they're the important ones. So it's sort of a vicious cycle or circle, something like that. How to protect and, if possible, develop your sense of importance. But when you're dead, well, then what's the importance? Srila Prabhupada made the point that the atheists, they don't like to see the devotees bowing down. So many people, I've heard people from other traditions also, not just atheists, but just different types of people. When they see the devotees bowing down, they don't like it. Bowing down to each other particularly, but just bowing down at all. And sometimes they criticize, why are you bowing down to an ordinary person? In other words, who's this person? This person's just nothing special, practically nothing at all. Yes. Or sometimes they say, you should only bow down before God. Of course, that the devotees do, but the devotees like to bow down to other devotees because the devotees appreciate the value of the other devotees. They appreciate the good qualities of the other devotees. They appreciate the service that the other devotees are doing. And therefore the devotees think that, oh, these other devotees are just wonderful. Just wonderful. And therefore they like to offer their obeisances. So this is something that I've at least noticed about Krishna consciousness, which distinguishes it, at least in my own experience, as far as it goes, from other processes, that the devotees are generally much more respectful than other people, whoever other people are. They're much more respectful. And it's not just some sort of blind, artificial type of respectful mood that one just sort of psychs oneself up to be respectful or appreciative or humble. I remember, I've told this many times, but I remember when I was a teenager reading Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And he offered a type of a formula or sadhana for if you have an inferiority complex that you just feel you have difficulty going in front of other people because you just have a feeling like you lack worth. So anyway, what he said, Dale Carnegie, as a sadhana, you must sit in front of a mirror 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes in the evening. You must sit in front of a mirror and look yourself straight in the eye in the mirror and say, you're great. You're just wonderful. Oh, you're just the best. Anyway. But that's very artificial because, you know, who's great? Who's wonderful? Who's the best? So it's artificial. So devotees, though, in general, are respectful, which is part of humility. At least it's a sort of an anga, a limb, an aspect, an element which helps make up the picture of humility. Devotees are respectful, generally more than others, at least like I said in my experience, in other traditions. They have difficulty with respect and humility. So, So yeah, I thought that we could meditate on this today and maybe next weekend and go on for a little while. A few weeks, try and focus on these things and get a little food for thought, for humility, and some encouragement, inspiration, encouragement for trying to develop humility. Here's an interesting thought. Think of this. When you're 20, or you know, say 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, I think we got a few around that age here, not so many, but a few. Oftentimes, when you're 20 or so, I remember at that point, late teens, I would worry what other people were thinking about me, and I'd be self-conscious. How am I dressed? How do I look? How's my hair? And, you know, when I walk, am I walking sort of in a cool way, or am I going to trip over something? So when you're that age, you tend to worry about what people are thinking about you, and you're self-conscious. But then when you hit about 40, then you don't worry, you stop worrying about it. Then if you're overweight, you don't worry about it too much. If your clothes are a bit of a mess, it's not a big deal. And then when you're 60, you realize no one was thinking about you anyway, because they were all thinking about themselves. Yeah. So, you know, humility is a very powerful thing, because when one is sincerely humble, then Krishna, he gives more inspiration through the heart about life, about what's going on, about what you should be doing, what would be good to do, and what is not so good to do. Krishna helps like that. We mentioned on a number of occasions how, and we mentioned just recently, I forget exactly when, how Srila Prabhupada in Krishna book, in the section, there's a number of chapters dealing with the Rasa dance. And in the middle of the Rasa dance, Lord Krishna left the gopis and went away with Radharani. And of course the gopis were thrown into just a great ocean of anxiety. Where is Krishna? What on earth has happened? Why has he done this? But he went with Radharani, so they followed their footprints. And then after just a little while, they found Radharani sitting on her own. Krishna had left her too. So it's a long story, and it's a very amazing story. But Prabhupada, the point that Prabhupada brings out, and generally is brought out by our acharyas, is that Krishna left the gopis because they were feeling proud of owning him, controlling Krishna. Krishna is dancing just with me. That sort of idea. And some form of pride or transcendental pride developed in their hearts. It wasn't exactly like that, actually, because they're the gopis, and There's no question of them having anything like ordinary mundane pride, but at least just to set an example for us and to illustrate to us how it's really detrimental to become proud, so that example's given. So Srila Prabhupada says there that in a devotee, in the character of a devotee, Krishna can tolerate any fault. Krishna can tolerate any fault except pride. A bit of stupidity, a bit of lust, anger, and greed. You know, all these things, not too much, of course, but some. And Krishna thinks, you know, okay, conditioned soul, got to expect these things to some degree. So he may not just immediately take some severe action. He tolerates your faults to some degree. And Prabhupada explains like this, but pride, Krishna doesn't tolerate, he doesn't like it, and he won't tolerate it. Means he will take action immediately, on the spot. He'll take some action to knock you out of your bubble of pride. So that's something worth remembering. That's really something worth remembering. The value, there's great value in humility. In many ways, but one of those ways is in the fact that Krishna likes it. Krishna appreciates it. And you know, again, like I said, not in an artificial way, but if in a reasonably sincere way, we're actually trying to cultivate a perspective on ourselves of humility. Who am I? What am I? What have I got to be proud of? That sort of idea. Krishna, if it's done in a sincere way, Krishna will appreciate it. And Krishna will reciprocate. Krishna will help you in many ways. In many ways. But on the other side, as we said, Krishna doesn't tolerate pride. He really reciprocates with humility. And he really, well, you could say, reciprocates with pride. I'll give you an example. There was one devotee who was a specialist cook in one of our temples in America. And he really loved cooking. And he was really good at it. And the devotees really liked his cooking. And he really liked to hear them express their appreciation for his cooking. So he would always fish for compliments. How was the sabji? Anyway, you know what I mean. I know it's kind of natural, but when it's overdone, then you realize, hey, this person is fishing for compliments. So one day, he made some super duper halva. It's one of the things I like to make. I was thinking one of the weekends of maybe doing a halva cooking demo for you. Yeah. So this devotee, he made just first class halva. And he made some halva for the temple devotees. I don't know how many, 30 or 40 devotees maybe. He made a whole big pot of halava and offered it to Krishna and took it out. And then someone started serving, and he, the cook, he was standing back watching the devotees to see the reaction. Because as far as he was concerned, it was just really excellent halava. So, okay, so now the devotee is serving it out. And the very first person who takes some, his hand goes in, into the halava. He picks some up, inspects it for a couple of seconds, puts it in his mouth. The cook is watching like, right! And the devotee started in a couple of chomps. And this look of disgust came on the devotee's face. And he spat it out. And he said, what is this? And the cook was in total shock. And then the next person did the same thing, and a number of them. And then they understood, instead of putting sugar in the halava, he had put salt. And you know, particularly if you make like halava for say 40 people, I don't know really, you probably use a couple of kilos of grains, and you might use, you know, the way I do it to really make it nice and sweet, say 2 kilos of grains, 3 kilos of sugar. So this halava had a couple of 2 kilos of grains, semolina, and about 3 kilos of salt. And you know, salt is so much stronger than sugar. So that's what happens if you become, or when, or let's say if you become proud. So they took that halava. You know, no one could eat it. They tried to feed it to the dogs in the street. They wouldn't eat it. And they put it at the roots of the trees. But I believe the trees would not even eat it. I want to read a verse. Where am I? Yes, here we are. Because I wanted to say a couple of words about humility, but in the context of Hanuman. I know Hanuman is a great favorite, very dear to the devotees, and for very good reason. He's just wonderful. And he's extremely humble, and he is extremely in the mood of service, just fully devoted to serving Lord Ram and the other devotees. Because after all, what is humility if you don't serve the people you feel humble in front of? If you don't serve, if you're just sitting there feeling humble, what does that mean? It's a contradiction. Yeah. Because humility, it's like love. It's like love. If you actually love someone, you'll do things for them. And if there isn't anything to be done for them, you'll find something to do. And if you can't find something to do, you'll just think up something to do. This is love. You don't just sit there loving. You know, just, oh, I love you. It's a contradiction. Yeah. So I want to read this verse. It's quoted in Nectar of Devotion. It's from Ramayana, but it appears in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which Nectar of Devotion is basically a translation of. So Hanuman prayed. Well, the book says, devotees also offer their respects to Hanuman, who always remained a servant of Lord Ram. The great devotee Hanuman prayed, Bhava Bandha Chide Tasyai Sprihiyami Na Muktaye Bhavan Prabhur Aham Dasa Iti Yatra Vilupyate. So it means, Hanuman is saying, I do not wish to take liberation or to merge into the Brahman effulgence where the conception of being a servant of the Lord is completely lost. Yes. Many people think, maybe not that many, but in sort of spiritual or quasi-spiritual circles, many people think that liberation, salvation, that's the goal, to become saved from your entanglement in this world, that this is the goal, liberation, salvation, like that. But Hanuman says, I don't want liberation. I don't want anything. If the conception of being a servant of the Lord is lost there, he just wants to serve. Just wants to serve. Anywhere, anytime, in any way. That I remember His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami, when I first met him, I think it was 1976. Anyway, it was in Prabhupada's time, when Prabhupada was personally present. And Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj at the time, he was Ghanashyam Das. He was a member of the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust library party. They would go to libraries and often the educational, like the university libraries, and sell the library's sets of Srila Prabhupada's books. And Srila Prabhupada appreciated that tremendously. He really appreciated that. And I remember that Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj at the time, Ghanashyam Prabhu, he would always serve prasadam. He would always clean up after serving prasadam. And he'd always clean up whenever there was some cleaning up to be done. He was always looking for the humble service. It was really wonderful. And you know, another thing, he wrote a letter to Srila Prabhupada every day for years. Hundreds of letters to Srila Prabhupada. Yeah. So that mood of service, of being engaged in service, this is a very important part of Krishna consciousness, and in a very natural way it's connected with humility. I remember many years ago, again, many years means like during the 80s, the later 80s, maybe 88, 89, something like that. His Holiness Giriraj Swami Maharaj was GBC at the time, or one of the GBCs at the time. And I remember there was a festival in Radharadnath Temple. and it was raining out. So when the program was finished, the feast was served in the temple room. So everyone sat down in lines in the temple room, and Giriraj Maharaj, he was the senior person by quite a bit. So he's given a sort of a seat of honor type of thing at the head of the queue. So when the devotees would sit down and the servers would walk down the line in between the lines of devotees sitting on the floor and serve out. So he was right at the head of the queue, first one to be served. So Maharaj was sitting there. They just started serving. So one preparation, two, three, four. It got to just three or four preparations, and he was the first recipient. Suddenly Maharaj jumped up, and he practically shouted out, "I am tired of being served. I want to serve. I want to do the service. I want the nectar." In material life, people tend to think the nectar is there in being served. Prabhupada said, there are two types of devotees. One likes to serve prasad, and the other one likes to be served prasad. Prabhupada said, actually, they are both good. But the one who likes to serve the prasad is better. So, yeah, here we're saying a few words about humility and related, interconnected points. I want to tell you one little story. It's kind of material, but it's true. It's a true story. Because in material life, you do get some people who appreciate humility, the value of it. Not that many, but you do get some. So there was this one important man. I can't remember what he did, but yeah, he was some sort of big businessman or something, maybe even a judge in the law courts. He was really quite a prominent personality. And some people came to see him on important business in the evening. And right as they arrived, for some reason, we don't know actually what the reason was, but for some reason, his wife got really angry with him. Like just, you know, uncontrollably angry with him. But he's trying to deal with these guests who are also significant people. But his wife is just making a whole commotion and everything. So he thought, let me take the people outside. They had some little sitting places out in the garden. Let's go outside. Out they went. It was a two-story house. And as they walked out, the guests walked out, and he walked out just behind them. As he walked out, his wife, up in the floor above, the second floor, his wife threw a bucket of water from the window over him in front of all these people. And the man, without flinching, without batting an eyelid, the man said, you know, it's better outside. Inside it was thundering. Outside it's only raining. Yeah. Here's a joke. Let me tell you a joke. This was told to me by a Greek devotee whose name, I forget his name, but he's a really nice devotee. It's an Italian joke told by a Greek devotee about a genie. And this may help some of us with humility. It may challenge some of us also in regards to humility. So this man found a bottle, and in the bottle, this Italian man in Milan found a bottle, and in it was a genie. And he opened the bottle, and out came the genie. And the genie said, yeah, what would you like? And the genie said, you know, I am a modern genie. I'm not one of the old type of genies who do these huge, big things. I'm more streamlined. And, you know, I'll do something. But don't ask us too much. And the man said, well, you know, I have some relatives in New York. Could you please make a bridge from Milan across the Atlantic to New York so I can visit my relatives? And the genie said, what? A bridge across the Atlantic? You're joking. I told you, I'm a modern genie. I'm more streamlined. I don't do the big things. So just ask me something more reasonable. And the man thought and said, all right. I would like you to help me understand my wife. And the genie said, what? Understand your wife? Yeah. Just understand my wife. And the genie became thoughtful. You want to understand your wife? I don't know. And the genie said, you know that bridge you were talking about? How many lanes do you want? I've been thinking about that for weeks now. I had to get it off my chest. Anyway. So, yeah, some humility. Some humility, which manifests in servants. We are reading through every night, Monday to Friday at least, 6 o'clock. We are reading through Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and we're right at the end, almost at the end of the fourth chapter of 14. So, you know, we're making progress. It's good. That's such a nice book. And we're at the point where, you know, it's a long story, but basically Narada Muni is trying to find who amongst the devotees has received the most mercy from the Lord. And so he goes to one devotee who he sees as a nice devotee, and he says, you've got the most mercy because I see you're like this, you're like that. These are all symptoms of having received the Lord's mercy. And the devotee says, no, I have no mercy at all, and gives different explanations and reasons why he feels like that. So Narada Muni goes from person to person. First of all, he meets one devotee at Prayag. Then that devotee says, no, I got no mercy. There's a king in South India. He's really got the mercy. And the king in South India says, me? Mercy? Forget it. You got to visit the demigods, particularly Lord Indra. He's got the mercy. So he goes to Lord Indra. You got the mercy for different reasons. And Indra says, no, 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 no. Brahma's got the mercy. And Narada says to Brahma, you got the mercy. Brahma says, no, you have to visit Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva says, no, I got no mercy. You've got to visit the devotees in Vaikuntha. And the devotees there say, no, no, no. Prahlad's got the mercy. And Prahlad says, no. And what does he say? He says, Hanuman's got the mercy. And Hanuman says, no, the Pandavas have the mercy. We're right at this point. We're with Hanuman, actually. We're with Hanuman in that seminar. And Hanuman, Narada Muni says, you've got the mercy of the Lord for this reason and that reason and different reasons. You're showing different symptoms of having mercy. And Hanuman says, listen, I got no mercy. Because when he went back to Ayodhya in the spiritual world, long ago, he left me here. He wouldn't take me with him. So what mercy did I get? He abandoned me. And, you know, I mean, he really, in a certain sense, he really feels like that. Sort of. But then, this is all going on while Lord Krishna was present on this planet 5,000 years ago. And so they were in Ayodhya, or somewhere near Ayodhya on this planet. Krishna, at that time, was in Dwarka, not so far away, not too far away. And Hanuman says to Narada, let's go! Let's go and visit Krishna in Dwarka. And Hanuman is speaking and saying, because Krishna, Ram, they're the same. I've been waiting here because when Lord Ram left the planet, he told Hanuman, don't go away. Just stay here. I'll be back. Mark my words. And Hanuman has been waiting since then, which is an awfully long time. So Hanuman's saying, yeah, Krishna, Ram, they're the same. I'll just go and see Krishna, and it'll be the same as seeing my beloved Lord Ram. And he's inspiring Narada, let's go, let's go. And Narada says, okay, let's go. And Hanuman says, hang on a minute. He told me to wait here. And if I go to Dwarka and he comes, what will he think? If I just abandoned my post, what will he think? And you must bear in mind that the Lord left the planet. It's a little hard to say how long ago. It wasn't just this Treta Yuga, which was passed, not just in this cycle of the four Yugas. It was in a previous cycle of the four Yugas. Each cycle is 8 million 600, am I right? 8 billion? Anyway, it's a lot. 8,640,000 years. Yeah, that's what it is. Well, it depends what you include. If you include the nights, brothers' lives. It's 8 million. So that's one cycle. And Jiva Goswami discusses in Krishna Sandarbha, when did Lord Ram actually appear? When was it? And he refers to two groups of scriptural authorities. One group says it was about 10 million years ago. The other group says it was about 20, 23 million or so years ago. So whichever way you look at it, you know, 10 million is long enough. And Hanuman has been waiting because Lord Ram said, just wait. Just wait. I will be back. So just wait. So that he, Hanuman and Narada, are about to leave for Dwaraka to see Lord Krishna. And they are excited and inspired. But then, Hanuman says, no, no, you go. I can't go because my Lord may come. And if he comes and I'm not here, or that would not be good at all. That would be terrible. So I'll just wait. This is humility. This is humility. This is a mood of service. Really, in the extreme humility and a very extreme mood of service. And when the devotee is like that, or as devotees cultivate that sort of mood and then put it into action in their lives, their daily lives, Krishna appreciates, because, you know, we may be ungrateful or sort of, we don't observe carefully enough what's going on and how we should appreciate what other devotees are doing. But Krishna is not ungrateful. Krishna is not ungrateful. He notices everything that everyone does, and he reciprocates. Actually, I mentioned Jiva Goswami a couple of minutes ago. In one or other of his books, Sankalpa Kalpa Druma, he states that Krishna is so observant, and so he takes note so carefully and so totally accurately. And he reciprocates so completely that Jiva Goswami says that Krishna, even though Krishna is so vast, he's like an unlimited ocean, but he never forgets even a single little drop of service. Just almost nothing. He never forgets. He never forgets. That's Krishna. And he's perfect in everything, including being perfect in appreciating, acknowledging, reciprocating, respecting. These are all forms of, all aspects of humility, and all connected with the mood of service. I want to tell you another little story, this time of Srila Prabhupada, that Srila Prabhupada, there was one time, I think it was 75, or maybe 4, it was 74, 75. Srila Prabhupada stayed in Los Angeles in our temple there for a few months, I think it may have been like 3 months, something like that, because he really wanted to get the publishing and printing of his books, really get it moving, because there were big delays. So every morning he'd give class in the temple room on his Vyasa-san, and his Vyasa-san in the Los Angeles temple, it's the same building today. Prabhupada's Vyasa-san is right in front of the deities, or just before the deities, but on the left-hand side. So he's sitting there, and he can almost just reach over and touch the altar on his left. And after giving class, he would get off the Vyasa-san and then walk around and go out through the front door back there. And he followed a certain path, more or less, every day. He'd get off the Vyasa-san and just gently, taking steps, he'd gently turn to his right, and then off he'd go out and through the front door of the temple. So this one devotee, he wanted to have an exchange with Prabhupada. He had not really had an exchange with Prabhupada before, personal interaction. So he noted how Prabhupada followed more or less the same path as he was going out of the temple every morning. So the devotee positioned himself right where he thought Prabhupada would just walk right past me. And he would be there, the devotee thought he would be ready. He'd be there, and when Prabhupada was like 1 meter away, the devotee would just sort of lean forward a little and go, "Jai Prabhupada." And Prabhupada would say, "Jai," or "Hare Krishna," acknowledge him in some way. So this was his strategy. It was a whole program he had worked out. So Prabhupada gave the class. Class finished. Prabhupada got off the Vyasa-san and, as usual, took some steps forward, and he's slowly turning to the right, and now he's heading toward the doors, and the devotee's right there. He's on the spot. Prabhupada's going to come right down here, and he's going to be just right there. So Prabhupada's walking basically towards him, and so, you know, 4 meters, 3 meters, 2.5 meters, 2.25 meters, 2 meters, 1.75, 1.5, 1, and Prabhupada suddenly turned to the right. The devotee was just about to move forward, and Prabhupada had gone to his left. And Prabhupada walked into the kitchen, which was and is just literally through the door and on the side, and you're into the kitchen. And there was Jayananda was cooking breakfast for the devotees. And Prabhupada somehow noticed him through the door. And so Prabhupada went and spoke with Jayananda and spent a minute with him, and then carried on out the other way. And the devotee understood, you can't really just artificially strategize and get some, you know, real Krishna conscious result. It really has to come from the heart. And Jayananda was such a person with such a heart. And Prabhupada recognized that. And such a mood of service. And Prabhupada recognized that and reciprocated with that. So these are some thoughts on humility and related things like service attitude, appreciation, respect. These are such important qualities, characteristics for the devotees to develop. So extremely important and valuable, because if we actually manage to cultivate these things, then we'll see how Krishna reciprocates. We'll see what mercy we get. And we'll see how happy we become. And what more do you want? What more do you want than to be just really happy in Krishna consciousness and just knowing that Krishna's looking after you in all respects? So I'll just say one more thing. I'll tell you just one more story. Again, it's a story some of you know. It's from when Krishna left Vrindavan. And he went to Mathura, then he went to Dwaraka. Then after some time he left this world. So Krishna left Vrindavan, or he was leaving Vrindavan the next day. So Krishna's about to leave, and Krishna thought, let me say goodbye to the devotees. So he went visiting devotees, saying goodbye. And he went to one place, it's called Bandiravan. If you're familiar at all with Vrindavan, it's across the river. You can more almost see it from Vrindavan town. So he went to Bandiravan to visit a devotee, actually brother of Radharani, named Sridhar. So he met Sridhar there in Bandiravan. He said, Sridhar, you know, I'm leaving Vrindavan. And tomorrow I'm leaving Vrindavan. And Sridhar said, really, gosh, wow, when are you coming back? And Krishna said, I'll be back tomorrow, don't worry. I mean, I'm going tomorrow, I'll be back the day after tomorrow. Don't worry, I'll be back next day. And Sridhar said, you know, I've got a feeling you're not coming back. And Krishna said, no, no, I'm coming back. Day after tomorrow, if not that day, the next day, for sure. And Sridhar said, but I just have this feeling you're not coming back at all. And Krishna said, no, no, no. If not the day after tomorrow or the day after that, latest the third day, I'll be back. And Sridhar was just saying, but I just got this feeling you're not coming. And Krishna said, all right, listen, just wait here, right on this spot. Just wait here and don't move. And you see, you'll see, I'll be back. I'll be back. Just wait here. All right, Sridhar said, I will wait. So Krishna left the next day, but the following day he didn't come back. But Sridhar had not moved. And you know, to stay in the same place for a day, I mean, standing, that's not easy. The second day he didn't come back, the third day, but Sridhar was still waiting there, standing. And after a week, Krishna had not returned. But Sridhar was still standing on the same place, same spot. After 1 week, after 2 weeks, after 1 month, Krishna had not returned. But Sridhar was still waiting on the same spot. 3 months, 6 months, Krishna had not returned. Sridhar was still waiting on the same spot. 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, Krishna had not returned, but Sridhar was still waiting on the same spot. 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, Krishna had not returned, but Sridhar was still waiting on the same spot. So 50 years, 100 years, after a while, Sridhar turned into a deity. Finally, devotees, 4,500 years later, Krishna returned as Lord Chaitanya. And there was Sridhar as a deity. And Lord Chaitanya came and embraced the deity of Sridhar and said, "See, I told you I'd come back." And of course, this, we're talking about superhuman people, and we are not superhuman. But we must follow in the footsteps of the great souls, the great devotees, in our humble ways as much as we can. So we should try to develop that tolerance, that humility, perseverance, respect, appreciation, the mood of service. All of these things are really connected together, and particularly humility and the mood of service. So please come along. Well, tomorrow we'll have our Hanuman program. We will tell Hanuman stories, Hanuman Katha. You want to know about if Hanuman really swallowed the sun or not? Come tomorrow and find out. Yes. But otherwise, the following weekend, weather permitting, we'll continue with that discussion of humility and related things, humility, some forgiveness. Forgiveness is also connected with humility. And like this, we will carry on for the next few weeks just investigating these very important and very wonderful themes in Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki. Are you going to just read them out, yeah? Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So, I do have a few questions. There's actually 5 questions here for you.
Okay.
I'm going to try and read through these and hopefully I get through. So the first question, Maharaj, is, Maharaj, how do we overcome our pride? What is the difference between material and spiritual pride? How do we identify which of these two we are? That's the first question.
How do we overcome pride? Well, that's just what we were talking about, really. You know, a very good way, a very good part of overcoming pride is to keep absorbed in service. In serving, taking, and not just mentally thinking, yes, I must be humble, what am I, I'm not important. That we also have to think, but putting it into effect that we actually live in a prideless way by rendering service. By rendering service. So that's, I think that's a simple answer and the beginnings of an answer. And how do you distinguish between material and spiritual pride? Well, you know, it's best just to avoid pride altogether. But spiritual pride, we mentioned this the other day, actually. Spiritual pride, a form of spiritual pride could be that we have the best process. We have the best mantra. Our Lord Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, we have the best Lord. And we have Prabhupada. He is just the best devotee. Because these things are true. They're actually true. And Prabhupada talks about this and says, this is spiritual pride. Whereas material pride means, I am the best. I can talk the best. I sing the best. I play mridanga the best. I can sit the best. I stand up the best. This is material pride. Okay.
Thank you, Maharaj. We just realized that a lot of these questions were from Wednesday. So it was repeated. We actually have one new question for you for today, Maharaj. So let me read through that one, which is the correct one. Dear Srila Gurudev, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. What is more important, Bapu or Bani, in terms of how to apply ourselves to devotional service?
Okay, that's a good question. Bapu means the physical form of the Lord or of the spiritual master. And Vani means the form of the Lord or the spiritual master in the form of their instructions. So of the two, the Vani is more important, the instructions, which are a type of form of the Lord or the spiritual master. Like Bhagavad Gita is the Vani of Lord Krishna. It is his form. He's personally present there. In the form of his instructions. So, yeah, because, you know, if we take the spiritual master just as a kind of, in a sense, a very practical example, spiritual master is, you know, in the human form, is moving around and interacting and going here and there and so on and so forth. And so to get the personal association, you can usually get it from time to time, at least from time to time. But you can't really get it all the time. You can't really get it all the time because the spiritual master is moving around. And unless you're in his party, one of his assistants, then, you know, you'll only get that association with the physical form from time to time. But the vani in the form, in the form of the instructions, you could be with 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days in a year, all day from morning till night. Even if, when you're in the personal company of the spiritual master, you know, you're not going to be sitting in the same room as him for the entire day. So, Vani, and the Vani, of course, means the instructions from which we learn. It is just a matter of being physically close. And you may learn some things just from the example of the spiritual master. But it's not like getting regular instruction and guidance and direction and correction, which you can get. You will get if you absorb yourself in the instructions, reading the books, listening to the classes and conversations and so on like that. Yeah, so, and you learn from these things. You can learn also from the personal example, but you learn much more from the instructions. So, therefore, Vani is more important. But having said that, Srila Prabhupada makes the point that when you are in the physical, personal association of the spiritual master, you should really render service very nicely in personal ways. Yeah, don't just be sort of, don't take it for granted.